This talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonnebacher at the Zen Center of New York City. Gokhan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order, coordinator for the National Buddhist Prison Sangha, and the head of operations at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from Okamura Roshi. He says, part of the definition of a bodhisattva is a person who lives by vow instead of by karma. Karma means habit, preferences, or ready-made system of values. As we grow up, we learn a system of values from the culture around us, which we use to evaluate the world and choose actions. This is karma and living by karma. In contrast, a bodhisattva lives by vow. Vow is like a magnet or compass that shows us the direction toward the Buddha. There are two kinds of vow: general vows taken by all bodhisattvas, and particular vows for each person. Each bodhisattva makes specific vows unique to his or her personality and capabilities. The four bodhisattva vows are general vows that should be taken by all Mahayana Buddhist practitioners. We must live by these vows. That is our direction. Our sitting practice should also be based on these vows. So what does it mean to live by vow rather than by karma? A bodhisattva lives by vow instead of by karma. And a bodhisattva is someone who aspires to live in accord with reality, to live a true life, to help others. So it is likely that you are a bodhisattva. This is from Okamura Roshi's book, Living by Vow. And I think that I've talked about this passage in the past, some years ago. I find it helpful. I find this book helpful. And, you know, as I was thinking about the new year and being here around the new year, this passage came to mind. The new year is a good time to kind of look at our lives, look at how we are living, how we want to live. And part of our tradition here and at the monastery is at the new year to make a vow, particularly around practice. Again, to use this time. January 2nd will, in a way, be no different. Right? And yet, this is a time where we can make this a skillful means. Use this transition into the new year. And so in this passage, Okamura Roshi is asking us to look at karma. First, to look at karma. Karma means cause and effect. Our thoughts, speech, and actions have an effect. We should study this, should look at this in our own life, in our own experience. How are we creating karma? We are creating karma. See that for ourselves. And he's also pointing to how cause and effect becomes habit. I find this is a helpful way to understand karma as habit. How karma tends to perpetuate itself. And so he's asking us to look at this as well, this way, his way of understanding, pointing to karma, as habit. How is it that we live according to habit? Is this a problem? Does this create suffering? How? He points to the system of values that we learn from the culture around us. There is a kind of cultural, social karma, right? Our conditioning. kind of socially, jointly held way of seeing the world. There are expectations that we pick up, learn, what we're supposed to value, expected to want, supposed to look to for satisfaction, for meaning. And we're receiving these messages all the time. Some of us may be, in a sense, more exposed to these messages than others, but none of us are free of conditioning. Right? We live in relation to each other, to others. We live in a culture. And so we're constantly being influenced by others. I think it can be difficult. It is difficult to see this conditioning because we don't see it as conditioning. We just experience it as the way things are. Right? Our view is difficult to see because it's our view. It's how we see ourselves, how we see others, how we see our world. It is a view, though. It is conditioned. It is learned. It is not seeing things the way they are. But we live in relationship with other people. So I don't know that we ever escape conditioning. So how can we be free within conditioning, in our conditioning? Becoming aware of it is certainly part of that. And of course, we live in relationship with ourselves. We influence ourselves. We are the most influential beings in our own lives. We're constantly creating our view, maintaining our view. And so there is a kind of cultural, social, commonly held karma. And there's a much more personal karma, our personal karma. Our personal habits of mind, habits of interaction, habits of reaction. We have our own personal view that has been shaped by our own personal experience and by what we have been conditioned into. We have our own particular ways of defining ourselves, of seeing ourselves. And this is primarily, entirely, we define ourselves in comparison, in relation to others. Recently I had an opportunity to spend a week in doing hermitage practice. And so by myself in a little cabin, and really the spirit of hermitage is you're just following your own schedule. You don't take a timepiece. And you're sitting, you're practicing. And so it's a week really of just sitting, eating, sleeping. I was really struck by how it was just me and my thoughts. And in this, seeing what happens, I'm having a little view of, well, how is it when there's no one else there to define myself in relation to? There's no one else to judge, to comment on. And seeing how I do it anyway. I think that I felt like part of what I was seeing is that any sort of insecurity, any judgment of myself really is I'm making that in comparison, even when nobody else is there, even when nobody else has any idea what I'm doing. All of it is a form of comparison. But what's the basis of that? Where does that come from? And being alone sort of highlighted that. Where do I get the idea that I shouldn't go to sleep early? That I shouldn't get sleepy during zazen? That I shouldn't have thoughts during zazen? That I should go for a walk every day? The Faith Mind poem, Sengsan says, one thing, all things, move among and intermingle without distinction. To live in this realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. To live in this faith is the road to non-duality, because the non-dual is one with the trusting mind. One thing, all things move among and intermingle without distinction. Saying that is the nature of things, all things. Where does the distinction come from? What are distinctions? He says to live in this realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. To be without anxiety about non-perfection. Where does this apparent non-perfection come from? What is non-perfection? Where does the anxiety about this apparent non-perfection come from? This feeling in my body, mind. He says, to live in this faith is the road to non-duality, because the non-dual is one with the trusting mind. So how do we cultivate the trusting mind? What is a trusting mind? Zazen gives us access to mind, to our mind, to look into the nature of our thought, habit, patterns, to see what's going on, to see what we're creating, to see how much all we are these thought, habit, pattern creations. This flow of thoughts and emotions, this flow of karma, constantly moving through us. Thoughts arise and pass away, arise and pass away. Maybe they're moments of stillness, of silence, just space, just awareness. Who am I when there are no thoughts? When I'm not reacting to something, not wanting something, not disliking anything, not having an opinion. Who am I when I'm not worried? When I don't have anything to do? Who am I when nobody else is looking and having a reaction to me? And the thoughts that take up so much of our time and energy, what makes them so important? Seem so important. Are they important? What gives them the power that they seem to have? What happens when we give our thoughts space? Space to come and go, to rise and pass away. And so during this weak in hermitage, alone with just my thoughts, I once again was seeing the thoughts that I have over and over again, for years that I've had over and over again, that I keep coming back to. I was noticing, you know, they're particular thoughts that I have during Sesshin, during Zazen, during a hermitage. So, one of my patterns of thought is the Brooklyn Nets basketball team. Like I'm sort of exposing myself a little bit here. So one day it would be basketball. Another day it would be planning, what am I going to do in the orchard at the monastery this coming season? And time spent in the past, I was much younger, college, high school. And so I was trying to look at these habits. I'm very familiar with these patterns of thought. And I was looking into all of these thoughts that I have about basketball. And seeing, this is a really good example, I think, because there's no, you know, it's completely a creation of my own mind. I don't know any of these players, any of these guys, right? I can read a little bit about them, and I do, and I can sort of create some ideas. But I don't know any. I don't know them, right? So how can I spend some? What is it that I'm creating when I'm thinking about them? I rarely even watch any basketball. And I was thinking, you know, the idea of a team is an idea. It is just an idea. It's just a creation. Right? This is like a, you know, there's some classical Buddhist teachings around to try and understand emptiness. It's maybe sort of a modern version of that. Because what is the team? Right? Last year there were like all these guys on the team. At the end of the season, half of them leave, right, or get traded, or and so there's a whole new group of guys on the team this year. Where's the team? What makes it the team? Right? Can you point to the team? It doesn't exist. It's just something that we create. And yet, we can be completely identified. Right? We get excited when they win, depressed when they lose. Right? But why? Right? Where's that coming from? And so looking at these patterns of thought and trying to, you know, use my practice. How should I practice these thoughts? How do we work with our thoughts? How can we be free in the midst of our conditioning? Free from our karma? Free in our karma? We liberate our mind, our thoughts. Ikebe Sensei, who's a Japanese teacher, was kind of in the same school as Okamura Roshi. She says, Zazen is sitting upright and letting delusions be. So very simple instruction. Zazen is sitting upright. Take this upright posture and let your delusions be. Don't do anything with your delusions. Don't get involved with them. Don't push them away. Just let them be. And she's talking about shikantaza, which is a Zazen practice of the instruction is just that. Don't do anything. Just awareness. Just be aware. Don't do anything. But I think this is good instruction if you're working with the breath as well. She's just talking about letting go. What is letting go? There's a way in which it's not doing anything, right? It's not getting involved. It's releasing our involvement. Just let thoughts arise. Let them pass away. The thoughts are going. They are passing. Just let them go. Thoughts come into being. And if we let them, they go back to where they came from. And then where is the problem? And where is suffering? Is there suffering? I feel like I'm just beginning to understand this in my own experience of working with my thoughts, with my all of the things that arise and pass away. To not get upset about them, to not fight with them. When we're fighting with our thoughts or with our feelings or with whatever we're experiencing, then that's what we're fighting. That's what we're creating. That's the karma, the habit that we are creating and perpetuating. And so, alone up in the hermitage, I had the opportunity to look closely at these habit patterns that I sort of seeing into how much they are just my creation. And, you know, I think part of the, you know, there are thoughts that are, you know, the Brooklyn Nets are really not very important, right? And so that's helpful to see that, right? Like there's no like hooks in there, right? So I can see that's really just my creation. It's just that I'm choosing to pick that up and kind of entertain myself with that. And then at the end of the week, coming down to the monastery and joining the Sangha, my brothers and sisters who I live with, for the Sunday morning program, very similar to what we do here. And seeing in sort of my relative clarity of mind from my week of hermitage, seeing how I stepped right back into my habits in interacting. And particularly seeing how I just started like grouching around and complaining. You know, we had some... do a little bit of work Sunday morning, same as we do here. And, you know, there was one of the cars that I wanted to use to go up and do something. Someone had left a bunch of stuff in the car, right? And I got so irritated, and I was like, I know who did this, right? They always do it. And I went to them, and I was like, did you do this? And I had enough sort of clarity to see, oh, this is just the same thing. This is just my habitual karmic pattern. This is how I'm defining myself, because of course part of the thought is I would never do that, right? And that's my business, right? To see that what I'm creating and to see its effect and to see its effect on my brother who I was accusing, rightly or wrongly. And interesting to see, that's his karma too, right? And that's his business. But I think that's helpful to see. We're all doing this, right? And we're doing it together. So how do we take responsibility for our own actions, our own habits, and release the energy from them, right? To see through them. They're just a fabrication, an illusion, right? This identity that I was creating in relation is just an illusion. and appreciating the power of our karma, the power of habit. You know, we can't just decide to change. There is a stream of energy in karma. I think that's what karma is. And there is karma that is old. It's older than we are, right? It's deep. And so we see it. We pay attention, right? We keep our eye of awareness open. And we push up against it, right? These barriers that we experience, that we find in our experience. We study it. We struggle with it. That's part of the process, some struggle with our own mind, with our own karma, with our own habits. How is it that eventually something can turn, something can loosen? How is it when we see into something, right? Something that we may have been looking at for a long time, and then something opens, we see through. We see it more clearly in its nature. See that it doesn't have any power from its own side, of its own. So there is karma and habit and living out of karma. So Okamura Roshi is asking us to look at that, is encouraging us to study that. And he says, we can learn to live instead from vow. And so what is this the power of vow? What is a vow? Right? How is that we can turn our mind, turn our energy with a vow? How do we make a vow? He says a vow is like a magnet or compass that shows us the direction toward the Buddha. So a vow can help us turn towards clarity, towards seeing things clearly and being awake. When we're living from karma, from habit, we are not awake. Vows can help us to turn the flow of karma, to turn our habits. A vow is making a choice and is something that helps us make a choice over and over again, make choices. We are constantly making choices. It can help us to turn towards what is clear and true, what is harmonious. I was thinking about my experience of vow, of times in my life when I have taken a vow. And it's been transformative. And I think that in all of those cases, it's like I was taking a vow that I was ready for, that I had been working on. Not necessarily that I knew I had been working on it, but then coming to actually take that vow, it was like I'd laid the groundwork so that vow actually empowered me to step more fully into what I'd already started to live out of. And so I think we should know that there is work that sort of leads up to taking a vow. whether we're fully aware of that or not. And then maybe that's what the vow comes out of. That's how we know what our vow can be, should be, what will be skillful. And so there are formal vows that we may take in our life, we may have taken in our life. Okamura Roshi mentions the four bodhisattva vows, which we will chant at the end of this talk, that we chant here at the end of each evening, end of each day of practice. They're expressing a direction, that they are really encapsulating the path, the Mahayana path. And in the context of our practice here, the precepts, some of us vow to follow the precepts, the moral and ethical teachings. And I think this is a good place for all of us to look. Right? And this is where, for me, it was clearest, you know, when I took the precepts. I took the precepts because I realized I feel like I'm doing this. I feel like I'm this is my life. I am making these precepts my life. So why haven't I made a formal commitment to that? And then when I made that commitment, when I took those vows, I was surprised how much it changed. How much I was empowered to more clearly work with the precepts. And then over all of these years since, they've continued to shift, continued to clarify, continued to open up what they mean. But I think the precepts are, they are, whether you are sort of on the path to taking the precepts formally or not, they're a really good place to look at to study, let them work on you. And so there are formal public vows that we take. But I think that most of my experience with vow is not known to anyone else. Right? This is something that happens internally. It's very personal. It's just with us and between us and us, between you and you. And so sometimes a vow can be a decision to renounce something, to let something go from your life that you see is not skillful, is not helpful, is not leading to freedom. Sometimes a vow is to pick something up, right? To strengthen something, to strengthen a habit that you see is skillful, is leading to liberation, to freedom. And, you know, the precepts are practice vows in the sense that there's kind of an understanding and acknowledgement when we take the precepts that we're going to break the precepts. Right? We're not going to live them perfectly just because we took these vows in public. Right? Because our habits are deep. Our desires are strong. Our greed is strong. And that's not an excuse, right? But that's a sort of acknowledging the reality of our human nature. And the power of a vow is that, nonetheless, it brings us back. Right? It, like that magnet that Okamura Roshi talks about. It keeps pulling at us, showing us the direction. And so even when we stray from a vow, it holds us. It can hold us. And I think this is true of any true vow. It can bring us back onto the path, back into harmony. And that there is because there is also faith, there is truth, that we can be held by our vows, be held by what we have stated to ourselves is most important for ourselves, for you. We can shift the direction of our karma, our habits. And so a true vow helps pull us into our life. Okamura Roshi says that a vow shows us the direction towards Buddha. You are Buddha. And so a true vow helps you to return to your true self, to live your true life. There is a way in which a vow may bind us, but a true vow in that binding liberates us. Because it's helping us to live in the way that is most true, the way that we want to live. We want to live a true life. We all want that. So I encourage you in this turning of the year, whether you come join us here on the 31st or not, wherever you are, to make a vow. Right? Make a vow that was is a true vow for you, one that will help you turn towards truth and freedom, towards clarity, and a vow that will be helpful for others as well. If it's a true vow, it will be helpful for everyone.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.